Hello, and welcome to the episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and join me today is Wario Will.
Alrighty then, let's go. Shining up the clubs, getting ready for tea time. Ah, man, like, gotta be safe. It's kind of a little bit exciting to see the reviews now for us for Mario Golf right now, and I can't wait to go for tea time now. Can't wait.
I just want to be the golf announcer. Oh, Mario's going for the 7-iron smash star. Oh no, he's the wind. Oh wait, no, he's using his power up. Masterful, clapping. Clapping. I did that to my dad the other day during he was watching one of the golf majors, and I start mimicking the announcer. He goes, Todd, stop it, because I can do them golf announcers down easily, no problem. All right, and joining him in his tea time is Tellius Tyler.
Yes, I will be reviewing this game, and much like my Celeste review, I will be reviewing this game, and you can expect that it will be losing a point for no Diddy Kong. Diddy Kong not being part of the roster, there's no way this is getting a 5 out of 5 for me. That's
Donkey's in it,
unacceptable.
Though, right?
A Donkey is in it, yes.
Okay, I just gonna remember.
Frankly unacceptable that Diddy Kong still has not been confirmed for this game. It's unacceptable.
He could be DLC. Ooh.
He probably will be, because he was DLC in Aces 2, but let's put some respect on him. He was, yes. He was, like, at some point in Aces, he was DLC.
But yeah, I like to put some respect on his name! His name is Diddy Kong!
His name is Diddy Kong. Put some respect. It's unbelievable.
Okay, but what if they put him together with, like, a Diddy Kong course?
Okay, well, that might make up for it. If it's, like, a grand reveal, you know, and maybe they add Dixie Kong in also. Okay, maybe.
Okay. All right, so last week, of course, was our big E3 2021 show, and not surprisingly, been a little bit of a light week. I knew we were to expect it, but it hurts. It hurts. So we're going to have a little bit of a lighter show today. We're still going to have fun, and of course, we're going to get all started off with, what have you been playing? So we didn't do that last week, obviously, because you're covering everything E3. So feel free to cover everything of the last 2 weeks. For example, for me, I have been continuing my Saints Row foray, and I am now into Saints Row 4, Reelected Edition. And yeah, this game's still nuts. Like, I know I should feel bad killing aliens after freezing them to death and shooting them with a shotgun that sends them 20 feet into the air, but I don't! I do not. I think I have always noted that Saints Row the Third was better than Saints Row 4 because of the story and the variety of missions, and I think they just went to the well one too many times with 4, and especially with the repetitiveness. But there is a distinct fun in the game, especially when you have like the actual story missions, like going into their personal simulations to try and free them from their own personal torture chambers, and then there's the loyalty missions, which is of course the Mass Effect ripoff. And so, like, one of them is, you know, Matt Miller, the ex-hacker that you almost killed but didn't, has a Nightblade, you know, fanboyism. And so he, of course, makes a fan fiction simulation of you having to work together with Nightblade. It goes horribly wrong, but what are you going to do? But my personal favorite is Pierce, who is like one of the Joker's crew. He tries to show you that he can do things his way, and it gets the work done. And so, of course, Pierce's thing is you have to sing in the car. And so they do Opposites Attract, and it's all good. And then they put on Biz Markie. You got what I need. And then the alien Zinyak starts singing it like opera style. Like, you got what I need. And they're like, what are you doing? He's like, he effed up Biz Markie. And it's just so hilarious because it starts out subtle because they're singing it, and then Zinyak jumps in and it's like, wait, what's going on? That doesn't sound like Biz Markie. Like, and then Zinyak just like goes full force, and like the boss is like, he effed up Biz Markie. It's like, I'm gonna kill that bit, you know? It's like that's art right there. Like, I've had people tell me that, you know, I'm too harsh on comedy, but like, comedy is good, it doesn't need explanation, and that is comedy. Alright?
That's one thing I like about Pierce. Like, he is definitely, like, yes, he is the token Joker character, but the fact, like, he is the only saint who loves classical music. Like, yeah, this is my jam!
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I just like that. Yeah.
So, But yeah, I do love this game, and I'm almost done with it. So I'm just trying to get through the next few weeks, because on July 9th is when Monster Hunter Stories 2 comes out. And so like I'm obviously gonna get that. But I just gotta hold off until then. So this will take me like another day or two to beat, then I might pop back into Pokemon Snap, and you know, maybe something else. I don't know. I'll figure something out. But and then of course I've been playing Fire Emblem Heroes, which had another summer banner that I don't want to talk about. Shame, all of you.
This one's not that bad.
Oh, it's still egregious. I'm sorry. Even Marianne is like, is this too revealing? And he'll just like, nah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Worry about it, Marianne. Have some dignity.
Come on, jeez.
No, you jeez, okay? Like, I do take personalities into account, and there's no way Marianne would be seen in that outfit, all right? She's way too shy.
What do you wear at a beach?
You can wear a much more, like, what Leonie has. That's very fine. That's fine. That's two-piece and still respectful. Like, come on. Anyway, but I will say I reached a milestone in summoning the other day. I reached a really good number of how many heroes I have. 420. And that was not intentional. I didn't have to clear my space. I just looked at it. I just looked at it and I go, oh, I'm at 421. And so I had to get rid of a hero. I'm like, oh, I'm at 420. 420.
All right, Beavis.
Is that like a smoking number? Yeah, we can smoke these heroes good. All right. But so yeah, that's been fun. I've been doing the Tempest Trials. And I swear, sometimes they just don't try with these. Like, the story is about a fish! The story is about Caspar. Can I just say Caspar? Like, really? You can't just go Casper. You have to go Caspar.
Caspar.
Anyway, Caspar and Ash, you know, they're trying to have a fish measuring contest. No euphemism there at all. And, like, that's it. That's the story. There's no Marth. There's no, like, oh, the Tempest is going to be destroyed if we don't catch bigger fish. Like, it's just, hey, let's have a fishing contest. Like, really? Like, try, dang it. This is the Tempest. Try harder.
I think I'm probably just taking a break because, one, it is the summer season. It's like, okay, let's just throw in a beach episode for the sake of a beach episode.
Fine. But, yeah, that's honestly been it. I've been impressed with myself because I've been taking more time to play video games. So, like, with Saints Row the Four, I've been dedicating, like, hour or two every night to play, and I've gotten through all the side missions, and I'm almost into the final rounds of the game. And it feels good because usually I'm always busy with work or with writing, and it just feels like the last few days I've been able to just go, you know, I want to play Saints Row for 2 hours, and it feels good. It's good.
It does. Yes.
All right, Will, how about you?
Personally for me, I'm just kind of like trying to get it into the stride because, yeah, this past week has been kind of busy. But first starting source of weekend, I have been just slowly make my trek again into the last stage of Ring Fit Adventure of Finalia, and yeah, basically they're just putting you through the gauntlet right now, just facing off the Drago statues right now. So just doing each of these stages, it's brutal, even for 30 minutes. But so I still feel sore even after just doing so much. So yeah, just slowly making my way to that finale, final boss. As well as you said, continuing on with Fire Emblem Heroes, right now I'm just sitting at roughly 850 orbs right now, so I am going back into my normal numbers until that legendary banner, which is roughly at the end of this month, I think, give her the 28th, so not too long now. So just doing that, and as well just continuing on with a little bit of new Pokemon Snap, also with the new just brief event of Overwatch with a deadlock challenge with Ash. So just trying to get her new skin, and also just basically breezing here with other games like Yakuza 7, Yakuza 7 Like a Dragon on PS4. Yeah, just continuing on that, as well as just trying to like break it, like making some progress on my backlog. So overall, just spreading around here and there. And of course, naturally, tomorrow is it's been a while since Mario Golf, seeing the reviews, we'll talk about it later, but overall, it seems pretty decent. And the only thing I'm just worried about is, like, yeah, it is similar in that Mario Tennis Aces territory when that first released, but it's still enjoyable from what I've seen so far, so here's hoping that it does provide me with some entertainment. So here's hoping. So overall, this past week, a little bit on light rate, but I'm spread about. I'm spread about all my games. So overall, pretty nice. Pretty nice.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. I seriously am surprised, actually, at this point that I haven't gotten Ring Fit Adventure. And I think it's partly because I would want to play it on my like my actual TV, but I don't have my Switch hooked up to that. It's a long story, but like it would take me a while to hook up the Wii, and I wouldn't want to just play it in hand. Or I can't play it in handheld mode, but I don't want like I don't want to prop it up on that really odd, you know, tripod stand thing.
Yep.
Like I don't know. I'll have to think about it, but we'll see. We'll see. All right, Tyler.
So I started Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne. When I say started, I mean like started. So I went through and talked to everybody in Tokyo before the Cataclysm or whatever.
The Conception.
Yeah. I knew Cataclysm. I knew it was the sea and I knew Cataclysm was wrong. But I met my first demon after the event takes place. But I had like, I got lost in the
hospital?
Which is embarrassing. It's like three stories, but I wish the things were better marked as to where you're supposed to go, because I swear I've checked every single door and I couldn't figure out where to go next. So I got disheartened and took a break, but I'll be back on that. I have been playing a lot of PlayStation currently.
Okay.
Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart came out. I love Ratchet and Clank to death. That game blew my mind. It is the most beautiful game I've ever played visually. It is just absolutely stunning. It's so smooth. The movement is tremendous. I've always loved that series, and I feel like back in the 2000s when it was young and fresh, there was like a new game in the series every single year. There was something, and they were all good games, but it was a constant stream of Ratchet and Clank. And in the 2010s and really up till now, the series has kind of been put on hold. It doesn't feel like that long ago that A Crack in Time was released, which was like the last I guess full length traditional PS3 game. There were a couple spin-offs and then one shorter game into the Nexus, but it's been 12 years. That came out in 2009. I was shocked when I read that, because it doesn't feel like it was that long ago. But I absolutely adore this series. So after playing that one, I decided I needed to write something about it, and I've settled on trying to rank these games. It's a boring thing. Everybody does it, but everybody also enjoys rankings. So I replayed Going Commando, which is the second game, and I'm almost done replaying the original. I probably played the original more than any other, even though it's far from my favorite. I think it's pretty flawed compared to Going Commando. Up Your Arsenal is the third one. I'm playing that next. And that is like in my top 10. It's been in my top 10 games consistently since it came out. I remember reading through Game Informer when that came out, and I believe it outdid Halo 3 for Game of the Month, which was just like the greatest moment in my childhood, because I, you know, Halo was rated M, and I had a chip on my shoulder that I wasn't allowed to play rated M games. So seeing Ratchet beat it was like the greatest thing ever. So I have been playing that, and I love it dearly. If you have a PS5, which you probably don't because they're impossible to get still, you need to play it. It's just Rift Apart is visually, it's truly stunning how great this game looks. I mean, we're past the Pixar animation at this point. Like, it's that good. It's just they fully realize this world, and as much as I wish that there was more content in the game, it's kind of short. You can forgive it because of just how gorgeous everything is.
Wait, hold on. A PS5 game that doesn't have a lot of content in it, that sounds so familiar.
To say it doesn't have a lot of content is, it's kind of true. So let me explain. Uh-huh. When I play the original Ratchet games, I felt like they were like a lot longer than Rift Apart. I felt that way. But now that I'm replaying them, I am finding that's absolutely not true. Rift Apart might even be actually longer than those. And I just was slow because I was a child when I played those games before. But it only took like 12 hours for me to beat Rift Apart, and I played it on the highest difficulty. Definitely too easy. If you've played Ratchet before, it's too easy of a game. But For like $70, it's a full price game. Like 12 hours to beat the single player campaign. There's challenge mode as there is in every game, but I would have liked more content there, which I was going to go on a rant about that idea that the games look too. I feel like games now, as much as I love Rift Apart, and I love Rift Apart, I feel like they've gotten, and I put this out online before, I feel like they've gotten too, they've almost gotten too big for their own good. Like, there are, Rift Apart is a pretty smooth game. There's practically no bugs, but there are way more bugs in it than there were in other Ratchet & Clank games.
Okay, go.
And I feel like that's true for pretty much every like Spider-Man. I played that as well on the PS5. Same sort of thing. It's a big game. It's not crazy long, but it's a big game. But there's a ton of glitches in it. A ton. And I think that that's because we've gotten to this point where there's just so much crazy detail that goes into every little thing in the game that it becomes impossible to catch all these glitches. I'm sure they have playtesters. But it just, you have to be playtesting every square inch of these massive worlds that you're spending just so much time on making the visuals look stunning. So everything has a great photo mode so you can take pictures and post them online. And like all that development time is going into those things that I do think that's one thing I love Nintendo for is their games still look great, but the focus never drifts from the gameplay. Like Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, the gameplay is amazing. It plays wonderfully. But the number one thing about the game is you're like, wow, I've never played a game that looks this good. And like, that's great that I've never played a game that looks this good. However, it's not my favorite Ratchet & Clank game because Up Your Arsenal had more content. Like, there was a better arena, there was more side missions, there was a lot more to do, there was a whole multiplayer mode. Like,
Yes.
I think that games on the PlayStation, and I would assume the Xbox, but I don't have that, they're too big. They're too big, and it's too hard to catch all these, like, all the glitches that are in them because they're so big. It's just literally impossible. Like, somebody's going to step on an area that's not programmed. You're going to fall through the ground as Miles Morales trying to walk to this feast house. Like, you do this mission with Miles Morales in Spider-Man where you have to, like, dodge these police, and like the game glitched out and they're just like, I fell into the street, into water under New York City, and I had to like turn off the game, turn it back on a couple times. It kept happening consistently and I thought I like broke the game. That just shouldn't have happened. Like, that shouldn't have been caught. I shouldn't have had to turn off the system. Like, Nintendo games, I'm sure you can find an example of when they happen, but oh, yeah. I feel like it's every single major game that I play on another platform has these glitches that you're like, how did they not catch us? Oh, it's because they're putting so much resources into making this such a massive experience and such a visually stunning experience that they're kind of, it's just not possible to catch all the things.
Or they won't put the time into, you know, trying to find all the glitches. Not that I know a game that had like, you know, 1,000 bugs that need to be fixed in one patch. Avengers! You know? But no, I totally agree with you, and I appreciate you mentioning Miles Morales because a lot of people were confused with, you know, the fact that this was going to be like a sequel, but no, it's not a sequel. It's like a side adventure, and they're like, well, wait, why isn't it a full game? And we never really got an answer because this could have been just its own like Spider-Man sequel. Hey, it's Peter passing off the mantle to Miles Morales, but no, it's Peter's on vacation, and of course Miles has to take care of the city, and of course something horrible is going to happen while he's taking over the city. Like, gee, what comic logic is that? It's comic logic. So and everyone has said like, yeah, it's visually stunning, but you know, some of the gameplay lacks in areas, and that's just how it is. And yes, to be clear, we all acknowledge that, you know, Nintendo games do have glitches. We've all had them in one form or another. Like, for example, I was reading a review for Mario Super Rush, and we'll be talking about that later. But like one of the things they said, that like, they noticed frame rate drops while they were doing like this really highly intense golf thing. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense because, you know, overloading the system and whatnot. But I know there was things in Zelda Breath of the Wild, and you know, like that game was so huge that you know they had to have like 300 QA testers. So you know,
I never had something like that in Breath of the Wild, which is that's a great example of a massive Nintendo game that I think they polished just right. Like your frame rate drops are one thing. That happens in Ratchet 2. I played it on performance RT mode.
Try
to run it 60 and 4K, but when it stuff's on the screen, it'll drop the res.
Actually, just a quick thing, because like I know our boss Keith actually told about, also reported that, like, I know they have gonna have an update to allow for a full on 60 frames performance last they checked. So what did that patch release out yet or
yes.
not yet?
Yes, that did. That was that came out day one.
Okay.
I know a major bug I had is actually one of my favorite Switch games, which was Three Houses. A repeated bug that I always had a problem with is that you have to go past an actual drop down castle gate to get into the chapel area.
Oh yeah, chapel.
And if you hit that gate at the wrong time, that gate ain't gonna move for like a few seconds, and then it'll just like jump up. And I'm like, I hit that like every time, so I'd always like try and fast travel to that, so I didn't have to deal with it.
Yeah,
that gate was so annoying.
That's a good one. That happened to me too. That's a good one.
So there you go. But like, and that was a huge game. But again, the graphics. While I like the graphics, you know, the graphics were never the intent. It was the gameplay. It was the storyline. The four storylines. So and no one's, you know, people say, oh, like I had a friend, a very dear friend, he said, like, you know, love the game, but man, the environment graphics look PS1. I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with that because everything else is fine. Because I don't care about the environment outside of like, you know, like cutscenes and everything. So, but yeah, like that is that's why that there's this divide between games nowadays. There's like Xbox, PlayStation, and PC, where they're like, you know, graphics galore, 4K, 60 frames per second, you know, hyper resolution plus Knuckles and all that stuff. And then Nintendo Switch is like, hi, we have games. You know, we got your Mario Odysseys, we got your Breath of the Wilds, we got, you know, your Marvel Ultimate Alliances, which I think is a great game. You know, like, we got these actual games, and you guys got visual things. Like, okay, if you want to play games, come to the Switch. And, like, you know, that's why Switch has got over, like, what, 85 million sold? So,
yeah.
I'm just saying.
I mean, it's definitely an interesting debate to deal with. Like I know, like some of our other staff here at Outer Haven as well kind of discuss the thing. Like, and also in the game industry, like, are games being too big, or is it too much? It's like, sure, it's like we want to have that whole grandiose, high power, high fidelity, high frame rate, yada yada yada, all the buzz and whistles. But now, like, I don't know. Perhaps like for the younger generation, they probably have as much time as they can. While when we grew up, is now we barely have any time at all to play video games. Now, like, do we have the moments to invest in these like grand epics? I mean, heck, I'm surprised I still managed to go and finish Final Fantasy VII Remake, and like all these different great epics that clearly deserve the time and effort to play with them. But now with everything that's happening right now, like, is it too much? It is a time investment, but when does it become too much? So it's always been an interesting topic to deal with. Yes.
Just remember that topic always ends with Nintendo wins. Moving on. All right. So as we noted, last week was E3 2021 week, and everything. Well, okay, not everything, but like most Nintendo things were pretty awesome, and it was very fun to talk about that. However, it is now gone.
Yep.
Let us weep. Like, I'm still having, you know, troubles with, like, wait, that was last week? It feels like so long ago now. It does. I know it's only been 10, it's not even 10 days, but it's just like, it's gone. I have to wait so long for the next one, or, you know, hope that a Nintendo Direct will come within the next 6 months.
Yeah, so wait in the next season, the fall season, like, when everything seems to like burst up again, like, okay, here comes the summer blues, no more E3, let's get back to where this Independence Day coming up, and yada yada yada.
But we do have some news pieces, so it's time to go down the warp pipe. And first, a storyline that I find infinitely amusing. The Pokemon Company has resolved a lawsuit. What lawsuit would that be? Well, do you remember when Pokemon Sword and Shield came out and a leak happened right before it, and a lot of people weren't happy about it because it's like they were really trying to, you know, contain the leaks. Oh yeah, the Pokemon Company went after them. Oh, they really, really did.
The Pokemon ninjas, yeah, the Pokemon lawyer ninjas. Yep.
Yeah. Ooh, that they're lawyer ninja. It's Greninjas, but in suits. So, the lawsuit has officially come to a conclusion, and the official court documents state that the defendants, which in this case are the leakers, are going to be paying $150,000 in damages. Ooh. And attorney's fees, which are always substantial. It's lawyer fees.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, this is the ultimate lesson. Don't try and screw with Nintendo. They will come after you.
Yeah, we have seen examples of it prior. Like, again, with fan projects. I mean, I still hate them for that, but still. But, yeah, for fan projects, food leakers and all that. I mean, it's bad enough that we had to deal with that whole Mario and Rabbids leak that happened right before, but that was due to Nintendo's fault.
Yeah, that was so Nintendo's fault. That was funny.
But if you're a fan and you want to go and try to break into the Fort Knox of Nintendo, don't. Just don't.
I mean, and I was thinking, like, well, $150,000 doesn't sound like a lot. Do you have $150,000 on you right now that you'd like to pay Nintendo? Thanks, though. Mm-hmm. And remember, and that's plus attorney's fees, because this lawsuit's been going on for a while. So, like, I would imagine that it's more like $200,000 at least. So, do you between the three of us, do we have $200,000 to give to Nintendo?
I barely even got that kind of scratch.
Do I have $2 to give to Nintendo? There you go.
I have $3.
So, I mean, if I sell my one-of-a-kind gold-plated and signed Ocarina of Time, I suppose I could scratch easily $350,000, but, you know, am I gonna sell it? No, I will not. no, I don't have that. Although I do have an ocarina, actually. I was watching the Death Battle cast the other day, and they had Brandon Yates, who's one of the main music designers, who's actually a friend of mine now, and he was talking about how they had the ocarina scene with the Song of Storms, and he goes, well, how did they do that? And one of his friends actually had an ocarina, and he goes, wait, someone actually has a good ocarina? And I'm like screaming at the screen, I have an ocarina! I have a good ocarina! I bought it, I play it, I have two songbooks for it. Alright? It was one of the best purchases I ever made at a Comic-Con outside of my Master Sword and Hylian Shield. Alright? I got the sword, I got the shield, I got the ocarina, I am set. So
I think the only way I could probably cover that kind of lawsuit is if I ever sell off my Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And I know, like, there was a like recent auction of Yu-Gi-Oh that was like past the 1 million marks for certain cards. But that's probably the only way I could cover that.
Send me that list. I still have all my Yu-Gi-Oh cards and my Pokemon cards. So
because I know like a first edition original Star Deck Kaiba Blue Eyes White Dragon original design is actually selling for a pretty darn penny.
I think I have that.
And it's just kind of funny because, like, yeah, speaking of Pokemon, like, as well, we are, I believe it's now the anniversary of the Pokemon card game, and I believe they just recently announced it that you gotta be re-releasing the original design Pokemon cards in the near future, including the original design Charizard card.
Oh, I could never get the Charizard. I knew someone who had a Charizard, but I never got one myself. I had a Blastoise in good condition, I had a Venusaur, I had Alakazam, which I was told was rare. Oh, boy, do I have stories about those cards. My personal favorite? I went on vacation to Florida. To Disney World. And I got back, and everyone's like looking at me weirdly. I'm like, what happened? And they go, so someone stole Tyler's Pokemon card. So Tyler was one of my classmates. And I go, oh, that's horrible. And he goes, we know it's you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I was on vacation. And they go, exactly! Like, wait, what do you mean exactly? Why would I steal it if I'm going on vacation? Because you could steal it, no one would accuse you. No, if I stole it, everyone would know it's me. And they weren't even those Pokemon cards. They were like the info cards. And I'm like, so why would I steal those cards? And they were like so convinced. And then I eventually, like, someone else admitted it or whatever. But they thought because I went on vacation, I stole their Pokemon cards. I'm like, that makes no sense.
I mean, you had, yeah, like, it's just, like, how old were you? Like, is like back in your early teens?
This was a third or fourth grade.
Yeah, like, you had a clear alibi, and apparently kids don't know what an alibi is, so yeah. I don't know, yeah.
Todd, when he got home that day,
Yeah.
pull the secret string on my backpack, revealing.
Yes, it's like, hey, this is my greatest performance ever! I have the cards and their apologies! And don't get me wrong, I could lie back in those days. Oh, gosh, I was so good. But no, I did not steal his Pokemon cards. I mean, if I was going to steal a card, at least one ones with, you know, value. And that, those were not that. But yeah, so go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still like, real mad as well, because I'm not sure you recently know about in little celebrity news, but apparently the whole Jake Paul, he won a Charizard card.
Okay,
and that thing
right
cut to $1 million.
It was Logan Paul.
Sorry. Okay. I don't know. The Pauls are the same. I don't care.
They are. They very much are.
Yeah. No, they brought that Charizard card into the match. $1 million on that value. What the heck?
I hate them so much. And he made 10,000. He made like tens of millions, like having a fake fight with Floyd Mayweather. I'm like, I'll do a fake fight with Floyd Mayweather for a couple, ten, like half that. I'll save you money. Like. Hate them so much. All right, let's move on before my brain melts again. All right, this wasn't actually a very interesting story. It's about Metroid. So here's the deal. Of course, last week, one of the biggest announcements by far was that of Metroid Dread, and which again is coming out on October 8th. And apparently, fans were so excited about this that on the 3DS and the Wii U, yes, it still exists, they started buying up like all the Metroid games they could. Because if you go to the eShop for the 3DS and the Wii U, you're going to see that Metroid Samus Returns is the top game on the 3DS. And then on the top of the Wii U is the Metroid Zero Mission Remake, Metroid Fusion, and then the Metroid Prime Trilogy. So, like, because Dread got announced, all the Metroid sales went up. So, yeah. I guess fans really want to catch up on their Metroid before Dread comes out. And I do not blame them.
It's definitely one of the classic games now. I mean, like, even the, like, GBA games, like, as well. Like, I'm not sure you've seen the cartridges on eBay. Those things, like, still fetch, like, high prices. Like, wow, old retro games still quite the lucrative job, if anything else. So, yeah, if you're a collector, you still have those things, yeah, might as well go and get them right now.
Yeah, I didn't get Zero Mission. I'm pretty sure I borrowed Fusion from a friend of mine. Because those are the days where I couldn't buy everything that I wanted. And so he had Fusion, and I remember playing it and beating it because I remember the whole story. So I have the Prime games. I have all three Prime games. I know I do. That's about it. Actually, come to think of it, I guess I only have the Prime. Oh, yeah, Prime games and Returns, obviously. Because that was really good. That's why Mercury Steam is doing Dread. So, yeah, I don't, because again, Metroid, I didn't really learn about Metroid until Smash Brothers because of the timing of it all with me and my consoles. So, like, I didn't get to play Super Metroid. That wasn't in my arsenal on the SNES. And then, of course, there wasn't an N64 game. And then GameCube came around, so I got Prime, which I enjoyed. Didn't beat it, but I enjoyed it. And same with 2 and 3. I didn't get Hunters on the 3DS. That was like one of the early 3DS DS games.
Yep.
And then I got Federation Force.
The mistake of your life.
No, I didn't. That's why I was laughing, Will. Yeah. I wouldn't ruin my time, waste my time with a game like that.
all right.
Anyway. But yeah, I'm glad that people are getting these games because Metroid deserves it. And if Dread and Prime do well, which I really think they will, then this will secure Metroid for a while. So,
Yep.
What about you, Tyler? How many Metroid games have you played?
So I have played, like, picked up and played the first one on NES,
okay.
Super Metroid,
okay.
Samus Returns, Prime 1, only Prime 1. And I think that's it. No, I've never beaten any of them or gotten super into any of them. Like I played Samus Returns probably about halfway through, and then I stopped because I think the 3DS was at the end of its life, and I just like I enjoyed that game. It wasn't like I thought, oh, this isn't fun, I'm gonna stop playing it. But that was pretty much the limit. I don't know if I'm gonna go back and play all of these again. If they release the Prime Trilogy for Switch, I would get that.
I probably would too at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much the only game I actually legally own is the Prime Trilogy on the Wii U digitally, and yeah, I really need to touch that up again. And of course, naturally, with the whole emulator and the Nintendo Online service with, I believe, Free Metroid on there. Yeah, Unfortunately, my experience with Metroid myself isn't as much, but just seeing the love for Metroid again is like, yeah. Guess what, Nintendo? People love their old IPs, so how about bring some old IPs with you, huh?
Yeah, I never felt like Metroid controlled like I wanted it to. Like, in those brief spins with those other older games, I felt like for a Nintendo game, the platforming wasn't super tight. And I know that's not really the point of Metroid. It's exploring. But it never hit that sweet spot for me. Dread looks like it's going to hit that sweet spot, though. There's a crispness to all the action in the trailers that I feel like is going to translate to a more enjoyable game.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that. And I've been seeing like all sorts of posts and fan art about Dread. It's been great. So again, it's on October 8th, so definitely look forward to that. Mm-hmm. Much like Will is looking forward to Shin Megami Tensei 5.
Yep.
So please, Will, inform them on the pre-orders thing.
Yep, so if you haven't been recently checking on the craze of Shin Megami Tensei 5, so right now it is pretty much being the hottest selling items this past week. So early in the week, during the week of E3, Atlas USA themselves has announced that the pre-orders will be going live this past Monday. And you can probably guess what happened. They did announce a very nice special limited edition called the Fall of Man Collector's Edition, where basically have a replica bag, soundtrack, a nice steel case, and music CD, and a collector's box. So basically, the natural nice pretty things of Atlas Collector's Edition. Then you can also probably imagine what will happen with two set collector's edition. If you know about Metroid Dread's collector edition, it's pretty much the same thing here. So when it first got announced for pre-order on that, I believe on the noontime on Monday, there was only like one site, which is like, I have a site in Canada, at first, and then after that, it had there was a pre-order like at GameStop. Obviously, those things went out real quick. And props to Wario64 on Twitter who put up these notifications. But like on the second day, Amazon put up their pre-order links. I got it. Thankfully, it's like surprisingly, it stood long for like 30 minutes since posting. So yeah, thank you Wario64 for putting up the pre-orders. And I believe on Wednesday, yes, they also released it for Best Buy, and that thing sold out immediately in 5 minutes. And I was talking to Koopa Keefe around this. I informed him as well. Right now, we did got some collector's editions ourselves, but if you go on eBay right now, they are fetching heavy prices. Big surprise there. So if you're trying to get the collector's edition, Alice has said that they are trying to work with retailers to secure more orders for other outlets. So if you want to try to get these collector's editions, Alice is trying to doing their best. But as of right now, keep your eyes on the prize. Keep those notifications on. Yeah, it's just kind of the game of the collector's edition. If you want to get these things, you got to be on the ball. And yeah, just want to say, scalpers suck. That's what I'm going to say. Scalpers suck.
I mean, like I've seen it as like kind of a trend recently. Like we saw that with Metroid Dread.
Yep.
Now Shin Megami. You know, it's like, you know, I know this might you guys might not remember this because I know I'm a little bit older than you, but this is kind of reminding me of like the comic crash of the 1990s. Because what happened was that these comic readers got the idea that hey, the variant covers are much more valuable than the main comics. So they were buying the variant covers and like putting them on the market and flooding the market with all these comics and everything, and eventually everyone was just like, yeah, I don't really want these, and it shut down. So I doubt that'll happen on this scale, but like it's sad when you're like the game's like, you know, months out and they're already scalping the pre-orders. It's like, what? Like, come on.
Like, it's always been kind of a weird thing of the game industry, which is also kind of very detriment of the industry itself, just the consumer. Like, we're just basically screwing each other over. Like, I want to get this pre-order, get this collector's edition. Like, there are those who want to, like, basically wants it legitimately, and there are those who just want to make it for profit. I mean, like with Amiibos or consoles or whatever medium you want to be collected out, or like Funko Pops or that sort. But there'll always be those who just, like, take it, like, and try to capitalize it at best, like, as schemingly as possible, and it's just it really is bad for this industry, if any. I mean, it's bad enough when the tops or like EA of that sort just want a money pinching with DLC, and now we as a consumer are just basically dog eat dog of these pre-orders. Like, no, I want this thing, and then like there are people just trying to scalp you for with extreme price. Like last I checked, because for record, these collector editions are going at $120 normal price, but if you go on eBay, they're calling at like $300, $400, even $500 for these things. It's just like, jeez, I thought corporations are heartless.
Yeah, you just can't release a special edition these days. It's without this happening. It's a total bummer. I think even like Fire Emblem Three Houses had issues.
Oh,
with it.
Yeah.
I didn't get that. That's how you know it was tough because I couldn't find one.
Like, I mean, I was
Fire
lucky,
Emblem and me.
I mean, I was lucky to actually get that since I live here in New York. So thankfully, the first party store is there. Thank the Lord. But yeah, just with everything of like. I mean, there are some collector editions that actually are worth the money. I mean, like, for example, the Breath of the Wild Legend collector edition. That thing is fetching great price, and it's clearly worth the value. And there are some collector editions, like, I don't know, Borderlands 3 with that Claptrap thing. That thing didn't really do much. But again, it's a sad state of the industry. Like, we're just trying to really screw each other. So, yeah. So to wrap it up, if you're trying to get these pre-orders for the collector edition Atlas, they're trying to help as best as you can. But keep those links and notifications on Twitter at all times.
All right. So something I am looking forward to. Neo: The World Ends With You. They have released their final trailer, and it looks apocalyptic. Like, seriously, like, something's going to die. Okay, something big is going to burn, and I'm excited to see what. No, the trailer was a five-minute trailer. They showed off, you know, gameplay and story and puzzles and teases of what's to come, and it looks really good. I mean, I know the game originally came out on the DS, and that was fine, so they did what they could there. But, like, this, like, the visuals and the cutscenes, and they're having, like, full voice acting, and I really appreciate that. So, like, this is going to be bigger than ever. But the big news is that as of tomorrow/today, depending on when you're recording this, so the 25th,
yep.
They are releasing a demo for the PS4 and the Switch, which you can play, and... when the game comes out on July 27th, you can transfer the data into the full game.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm getting it.
I think I'll definitely try it out as well, just to see how it plays and all that. And yeah, just by seeing that entire trailer of itself, like again, that, and of course, naturally, you see Deku, like what's his purpose in this entry?
Stop, what did you just say?
Deku?
Neku!
Neku. I'm sorry.
This isn't My Hero Academia.
I'm sorry. I won that letter.
Wrong spiky haired kid.
Okay. Neku. But yeah, it's. It seems pretty nice. And plus, the voice acting stuff is pretty top tier. So I would definitely give this a try once it comes out today or tomorrow. Yeah.
So again, that'll be on both the PS4 and the Nintendo Switch. It'll be about noon on Friday the 25th. So definitely check it out. All right, next up, as we alluded to earlier in the podcast, Mario Super Rush is coming out. When's it coming out?
Today.
Yeah,
today
at the time of the release. And the reviews are already out. And it's actually a pretty unique mix because usually I see a little bit of a uniform thing going on here between, like, you know, like 7s, 8s, 9s, and perfect scores and all that such. But there's actually been a little bit of a divide here about how good it is, which is not interesting. So for example, on this one review roundup I found, there's a 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, 8.25, 8 out of 10, 2.5 out of 5, a liked, a recommended, and then a 4.5 out of 5. So yeah, that's a wide range of opinions.
Yeah, that's kind of the one thing I predicted, like, from what I've seen Game Explained, I've seen Game Over Greg's review of it all. And so far, basically, it is following, as I said before, is like they're going with the same, similar Mario Tennis Aces territories. Like, it is granted a few bare bones. Most of the criticism is basically rounding, we're going to like these standard courses is like, yeah, it is the typical grass, forest, desert. And the only thing, like, remotely different is the Bowser's Castle, which they showed off, which one thing is like the criticisms that is not the Mario stages that, you know, like a la Toadstool Tour. Like, if you recognize that Mushroom Kingdom stages, those things were beautiful in Toadstool Tour. So the fact that there's no stage like that here in this one is kind of sad. But who knows? We're going to, as I said, they're going to be up the game with free DLC with the new Donk City stages as well as other. So here's hoping that it will continue to support it after release. So there's that, as well as like the single player is like it's pretty darn linear. So it basically gets you to the basics of golfing. So a little bit here on the bare bones, it doesn't go above and beyond as like other sports games, but there is moments of enjoyment here to say the least. So that's kind of the main consensus so far from what I've seen.
Yeah, I also reviewed Mario Tennis Aces actually for The Outer Haven, and yeah, I haven't played this yet. It hasn't come out yet, so obviously I haven't come close to making up my mind about this game, but I'm not surprised by the reception. Having played Aces and then seen the trailers for this and hearing the story mode is a bit of a disappointment. That kind of fits what Camelot has done recently. Aces is a game I've actually, when I look at the playtime on my Switch, I played that game a lot, like a crazy amount. Yeah, I didn't realize how much time I put into that game. But I only gave that a 2.5 because it was half-baked in so many ways. And while I enjoyed the main mode, it had all sorts of balancing issues. It had all sorts of pacing issues. It was the trick shot gimmick just didn't really work. It was a mess on release. And the game got better through updates. It definitely improved, and I probably would have bumped it up to a 3 if I did like a 2 month later review. But we'll see. I'm excited to get my hands on this game and start taking a critical look at it. I did say in the trailers when it came out, and I won't say names, but there's one host on this podcast who tends to jump in and defend trailers and say, well, we don't know what it's going to look like until it comes out.
This is true.
And I did say the courses looked a little not Mario enough for me. So that does still hold so far. Now, maybe when I play the game, I'll see more little details. But from the trailers, I do wish that they had more Mario elements, like warp pipes everywhere. You could hit the ball into the pipe and have it shoot out somewhere else. Like that's great stuff. That's what I love about a Mario Golf game. At the same time, I'm glad to see Speed Rush is pretty much universally liked. All the reviews I've read have said Speed Golf is great. And I think that's the big draw, right? Is Speed Golf and Battle Golf.
Yes, so Battle Golf. Like, granted, it's only like that 2 neon stages stadium, like, but overall, it is like this thing is definitely best play with friends. So I'm very curious how the online is gonna handle. I've heard like it does pretty decent. So I look forward to once I get a chance to actually play with you, Tyler. Like, yeah, Speed Golf, all that. See how it holds up. So
yes,
those are the main pros of this game so far. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So I look forward to my review. I will have it up as soon as I possibly can. And with a game like this, it shouldn't be that long.
Mm-mm.
All right. And finally, we talk about Sonic the Hedgehog.
Hey.
Yeah, because now there's a two-part to the story, one of which I didn't tell the guys about, because it's a really odd thing, because there was a video made, and then it got deleted by the maker, and I'm not sure why it happened. So here's the deal. So I went on to Twitter the other day, I think it was Tuesday, and I see that there's a video on the X-Play channel, the X-Play G4 channel.
Okay.
And it's Adam Sessler, and of course the eternal host of X-Play in my mind, alongside Morgan Webb. And he's doing a little skit with an intern about Sonic games. And based, long story short, the intern is trying to tell Adam about OC Sonic characters, because that's a very deep rabbit hole. And Adam realizes, hey, has there been actually any good 3D Sonic the Hedgehog games? And so he dives into like a 10-minute, you know,
the
rant.
Critics will say there has not been.
The critics are wrong. Oh, yeah. So he goes into, he starts off with, you know, the Sega Dreamcast, and he goes into the PS2 era and everything else in between about how Sonic games in 3D honestly haven't been good outside of technically Sonic Generations.
Great game.
Great, yeah, but there's a catch to that. And like a few others. And like obviously Sonic Mania, but that wasn't a 3D game. So, but like he notes that Sonic Generations weren't praised for its 3D nature, but for the fact that it went back to the roots of the original 2D titles. And like that's what Sessler was pointing out, was that You know, while the 3D jump in a way was necessary, they never were able to recapture the feeling of the 2D levels and the speed around it. And every time they tried, it was either buggy as heck, like with the Sonic Heroes, or the Sonic 2006 game, which even Tyler cannot deny is an abomination to this.
Oh, world. that's a disaster of a game.
Yeah. See, if the speed
in that game is terrible too. Like, yeah. Sonic is not fast except for on those on the rail segments. That game's awful.
Yeah, I mean, we're not even talking like, you know, like it's so bad that if it was at the Olympics, it wouldn't even get a silver.
If you removed the glitches, if that game was a glitch-free game, it would still be terrible. That's something people don't recognize
there you go.
About that game.
No, Sessler realized. Sessler acknowledged it. Anyway, so he does like a very fair, I felt a very fair and objective rant. And I watched it and I was like, oh, this is fun. So I stop and I go do a thing. I like realize, oh, wait a minute, I haven't shown this to Tyler yet because I'm sure Tyler would get a hoot out of this. I go back to the channel and I actually made a tweet about it. I got a big response from people and they deleted the video.
What?
I don't know why they deleted the video. I don't know if they just got like a bunch of backlash over it, but it went from like being shared and talked about amongst the various G4 channels to being gone. And I'm like, why? Okay.
I actually saw the discussion around this a little bit on, but I didn't know they got rid of the video and I didn't watch it because to me, listen, you opened this can of worms.
I did.
For me, if it's not gonna be crazy long, there wasn't a lot that happened this week. I'm gonna take the floor for a second here.
By all means.
All right.
Sonic Adventure is a very good game. The first one it's a really good game. It still is fun to play today. It's still one of the better 3D Sonic games. The amount of content in that game, we were talking about content earlier, it always amazes me how much is in that game. There's a ton to do. Sonic Adventure 2 is a fantastic game.
Created from the gods.
Created from the gods.
Even Sessler praised that. I just want to note that he did say Sonic Adventure 2 was better than the first one.
It is. And Adventure 2 does not have as much content as the first one. The first one's a little loose with the controls. It's not terrible, but it's a little loose. Adventure 2 is like, that's how 3D Sonic should control. That game is great. And it does have flaws. There's not enough Sonic and Shadow levels. There's only 10 Sonic and Shadow levels out of 30. Mm-hmm. There should be more. That's why Adventure 1 makes up a little bit of ground. Not enough. Adventure 2 is better. Sonic Heroes is a deeply flawed game. Mm-hmm. It is a buggy mess. When it's not buggy, it's really fun, but it's too buggy to be good. I always am disappointed when I go back to replay that because I loved it as a kid, but replaying it does not hold up. We talked about 06, obviously. Unleashed is where the franchise gets into this weird ground.
Yep.
Because the boost formula is invented, and I don't like the boost formula where the daytime Sonic levels, you press X and you boost and you run through all the enemies. You really don't have to do much platforming. You're just running as fast as you can, and it's almost like a racing game where you're doing the sharp turns and every now and again it flips to 2D and you do some platforming, but it's never quite enough. At the same time, in Unleashed it was thrilling because you are going so fast, the visuals are incredible, that game is gorgeous, and there's the energy around the game feels right. Felt like a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus, it has a good soundtrack as well, but then it's possibilities. Yeah, that day I lost listening to that today. Yeah.
Awesome soundtrack as well. Great point. Colors is a really good game. People really like it. I'm not as big on it because it's the boost formula again. There's a little bit more platforming, but the 2D sections are wonky. This is where Sonic Team lost their touch with the 2D platforming stuff. Like, it wasn't that bad in Unleashed. I remember it being pretty good. And then in Generations, they, like, perfected it. They had the 2D sections and the 3D sections. They were both amazing. I feel as though Sonic Lost World, it was a weird game, controlled poorly, controlled strangely. I thought the game was the right direction for Sonic. I'm not arguing that it was a good game, but by putting the controls by getting rid of the boost, the player had more control. It went back to platforming. There were multiple paths to get through the levels. That's what you want in a Sonic game. And it was all in 3D space. And yes, it took it took inspiration from Mario Galaxy.
Yep.
But if that game, if Sonic Team has, they're not, they have, they, the jump physics are bad. They're bad. It's not a good game. Don't get me wrong. But it's the right idea. And then they got rid of it. And they went back to the boost and forces. And there are some good boost games. I've said there are some good boost games. But the boosting mechanic takes the control out of your hands. And it just makes the game feel like... it, I feel like Forces is a logical conclusion to the boost formula. It's an on-the-rails game where you really don't feel like you have much control. You're not really doing too much. And I would like to see them go back to that Adventure 2, that Lost World style gameplay. And if they did that, I think that they would find people like the 3D games more, because it's not like it's impossible to do. Adventure 2 is a really good game. Like, that's it. As a Sonic fan, I feel like you people just roll their eyes when you say that it's actually a good game, but it, like, it really is a good game.
It is. Yes.
So yeah, they need to bring it back to giving the player a world to explore and really giving you the power to check out these worlds. It's not rocket science, and they've made it seem like it is, because frankly, Sonic Team has not been on the top of their game for many, many years. I would love to see what after how the success of Mania and that 2D game being as great as it was, it's the best Sonic game ever made. Like, Mania is the best Sonic game ever made.
The problem with that, and I don't disagree, but the problem is that Mania was a fan game.
Yeah.
Taken over by Sega. So doesn't it show that the fans know Sonic better than Sonic Team?
So pull back the curtain. You had to step away from your computer for a second. And I was just saying that, actually. That was the point I was going to get to, is I would love to see what a fan made 3D game would look like if it had the budget that Mania did. Because the Sonic Team just doesn't know what they're doing. Lost World Concept was good. They just didn't execute it. They had this wonky jump that just didn't work. And like that's on them. That concept was right. And then they steered away from it because the game got poor reception. But it got poor reception not because of the concept. It was because they can't execute a control scheme, right? And they haven't been able to execute a control scheme in 15 years. So, like, I will say 3D Sonic has been rough. But there are some good games if you've played them all, you know the good ones. And they're not perfect. None of them are perfect.
Right.
But they could be that good if a team with more, I don't want to say talent, but if a team came in and really nailed the concept, a 3D Sonic game would be an absolute delight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I can only imagine how, like, a 3D Sonic game would be. I mean, someone who has clear love for Sonic Adventure 2 Battle, and then, like, basically do something with that. Like, I don't know, put a generation paint on it with like, I don't know, better level design of said Muzzle of Battle 2, then yeah, I think we could definitely see something amazing great. I mean, I still remember even like the Dark Horse entries back on the Wii, which, like, again, Seven Rings, Dark Back Knights, all those games were, like, I mean, personally for me, I kind of enjoyed Seven Rings, but it was definitely rough with the motion controllers. So if there was a team out there that can actually do something with this formula, like, as I said, they've been struggling, the team has been struggling for so long, like, what they can do with it. But, like, I don't know, take some cues, like I said, like with Odyssey, with Galaxy, or like with other different platformers and 3D worlds, like something like that. I think you may find something to work into the Sonic franchise. So, like, I mean, heck, I'd be very impressed if they actually do a full remake of Sonic Adventure Battle 2. That, I think that, which many people seem to be clamoring for. So, I think that probably would do, but yeah.
I can't believe they haven't done that yet. I can't believe they haven't done, or I think that that's like Ben Simmons at the free throw line. Like, Sonic Team is afraid that they'll just blow it. They're afraid that they're afraid they'll mess it up and, like, tarnish that game's just beloved legacy.
Yeah. Whereas if I was hired by Nintendo, I'd be like Trey Young scoring at everything I do. I'm just saying.
Right.
I'm just saying, Will. I'm just saying. I'd be rookie of the year easy. Anyway, so I think for me, and I'll admit, I have only played a handful of Sonic games. I actually did have Sonic Heroes, ironically enough, on the PS2. What was the GameCube? I don't remember now.
I think, yeah, PS2
and
GameCube.
It was on multiple platforms.
Yeah, I know, but I was wondering which one I had. So I remember Sonic Battle on the GBA. It's my personal favorite.
Oh, yeah,
favorite.
Yeah.
My personal favorite Sonic game ever. I loved it. I think if for them, they try too hard. And I know that sounds odd, but we can all think of franchises where they try too hard. They tried to be innovative. They tried to have too much going on. Like a Mario Sunshine.
Paper Mario too.
Yep, every Paper Mario game after Super Paper Mario. You know, they try too hard. The Sonic is meant to be simplistic yet fun. You know, it was supposed to be the anti-Mario. It was supposed to be fast, furious, and, you know, have a lot of attitude. And then, it's like, hey, we have to throw in, like, the Wisps, and the Werewolf, and Silver, and... Okay, can we all agree that Big the Cat sucks? I mean, Big the Cat, anybody?
I mean, the only good thing about him was John DiMaggio. That was the only good thing.
But even
thing
he hated him! Even he hated Big the Cat! Like, come
yeah,
on!
Yeah.
Anyway, but, like, what they really need to do, if they really want to do a 3D Sonic game and make it good, they need to just strip it down to what made the 2D Sonic games great, and then just try and recapture the experience. Now, we'll take.
That's what they tried to do with Colors.
Yeah,
was like the concept behind Colors, and yeah, it was good.
I would argue that was one of the more successful ones for the sole reason you know, they're bringing it back and they're doing like that animated series. So clearly, they hit something with that. So, but even with that, but that's still the Wisps. Ugh, hate that word. Wisps. Anyway, but like strip it down to like what makes Sonic games great, the speed, the levels, and everything. And even if you just have like some fun things with the camera where you start out in 2D and then you get to a section where you go 3D and then you pan right back to the 2D, and that might have happened in a Sonic game. I don't know.
It's happened in many. Yeah.
Okay, there you go. But like if you do something like that, I think, you know, it just keep it simple and then build off of that, because there's a reason why Sonic became a big franchise, because they knew what they had for a while, and then they lost their way when they went 3D. That was the whole point of the Sessler video, was that they couldn't replicate what Mario did, because Mario kept things on a certain level while Sonic went all over the place. And then did you mention Sonic Boom?
No, I didn't. We don't count that.
Yeah. We don't count that. But like that's the dark side of gaming right there, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, say what you want about Mario, but even like Sticker Star is nowhere near the rise of Lyric. All right, like, yeah. So I want, don't get me wrong, even though I'm not a Sonic fan like Tyler is, he's much more of that than I will ever be. I still want the franchise to succeed. Like, I will always remember October 10th, 2007, when Sonic got announced for Smash Brothers and the Live and Learn video played for him, you know? Sonic was in Smash! It was awesome!
Yep.
And Sonic's had some good things after that, even if, you know, Mr. Sessler doesn't want to admit it, like, you know, Mario and Sonic at the Olympics. I will always champion that, because, you know, it didn't need to happen, but it did, and it was successful, so I can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So... And there is this, you know, the mystery 2022 game that was teased at the Sonic Central. But if that fails, then I'm with Tyler. Just like, give it to the fans.
Yeah.
He's like, here's the Sonic IP. Go nuts. You know, and Tyler, I'd say you head up the project.
Listen, you know, I could write a Sonic game that fans like myself would adore. They have gone. That's the one area where Keep It Simple, I think, isn't right. The way they tell the Sonic stories these days are too straightforward. It's too, like, you don't need a convoluted plot, but Adventure 2's plot is, like, awesome.
It's truly great.
Like, it's so cheesy, but it's just delightful. I love that story. It has some of my favorite cutscenes. And again, it is so cheesy, but that's what makes it great.
Is that the one where Shadow couldn't get the fourth bleep in Chaos Emerald?
No, that's Shadow.
That was a different game.
That was a little too much.
I just wanted to make sure.
No, yeah, the Adventure 2, the Sonic versus Shadow final cutscene.
Oh,
it's
just the best.
It's the absolute best. A scene where Eggman's got Amy at gunpoint. Like, if this happened in a Sonic game, Eggman has Amy Rose at gunpoint. And it's
It's basically such meme material. I mean, even till now, it's been referenced for so much. Like, oh, like, fake, I found you, faker. And that thing has been meme for so long after, years after. And just, like, all these great moments. And, of course, I still remember, King Boom Boom. Ugh, that ghost. I still hate that thing. And so, yeah, I mean, when a game is so meme for so long, I mean, yes, Shadow is also a meme of itself, which with that game, Shadow the Hedgehog game, but yeah, Adventure 2 is just like another league of its own with how just like partly cheesy, also partly serious with that end of the big story.
It's a perfect blend. It's a showcase for the character. Sonic is like tough and like confident and cocky, but he's also like, there's like an element of real danger to it that like you're on the edge of your seat. You're on the edge of your seat in so many cutscenes. You're like even now as a 27-year-old, I go back and watch that or I'll replay the game. Like, I can't believe how fun the story still is. It's really, really fun.
All right. Well, the actual reason we were trying to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog was that the Sonic concert has happened.
30th anniversary.
Yeah, 30th anniversary concert. And it was announced during the Sonic Central event, and both Will and Tyler have watched it. So, gentlemen, your review.
Like, overall, on this thing, if you're even if you're not a Sonic fan, this concert was like, it was hard not to get excited. It's just simply hard not to get excited. Look, props to Nintendo, again, they are the major rivals to Sega, but this concert, that whole full orchestra, and like, cheering, like, I don't even play a lot of Sonic games, but even I can't help but get pumped up from listening to these renditions. Like, from, like, even hearing that little bit moment of, in 2006, of the orchestral rendition of His World, that thing got me pumped. And then, of course, that whole intermission with the Chao Garden, like, they have not forgotten awesome. About the Chao Garden.
That was awesome. And they're all playing their little instruments. It's adorable.
Yeah, like, everyone was like, it was so cute. Even like the YouTube chat and Twitch chat was like, oh, it's so cute. Like, come on, bring back Chao Garden. Like, it's been basically preaching Tyler's message for so long. Bring back Chao Garden. And of course, like, yeah, there's the orchestral rendition, just all these things. Even I was like consulting with another friend of mine as well. But yeah, and of course, naturally, the big thing was obviously with the band Oshitani, as well as Crush 40 at the second half, which, like, it just blew it out. And of course, like, a special appearance from Nate Wants to Battle, like, all that, like, these great songs, all that. I mean, the only thing I am kind of sad is, like, one, no Seven Rings in Hand. I wanted that song. Instead, they had to choose Knight with the Black Knight. I was like, really? That was a better song than Seven Rings in Hand? I mean, granted, Seven Rings in Hand was originally created from a different composer, but Crush 40 had their own version, but I digress. So, but yeah, just all these different songs, of course, Escape from the City, the penultimate song with Nate, and of course, naturally, that finale of Live and Learn with everybody, the orchestral, the band, and Crush 40. It's just like, yeah, it was just so amazing. I can't help, I almost cried when I heard that.
Yeah, the Sonic music is, like, always the best. The highlight for me, undoubted highlight, is when they did an orchestral version of It Doesn't Matter and Believe in Myself. Yeah. Those that Tails' theme, Believe in Myself, it goes exactly what I was saying about the story. It's just so cheesy and yet just so joyful. I love it. And It Doesn't Matter is just, like, the greatest song. Crush 40 is eternal, and they always nail it. I wish that they did a little bit more, because they do Open Your Heart, I believe, was their opening, which is great song. But they didn't do I Am All of Me, the Sonic Heroes final boss fight. What I'm Made Of. They didn't do What I'm Made Of. They didn't do It Doesn't Matter. It Doesn't Matter. Just needs to.
It needs the vocals.
Needs the vocals. Like, it's just that's just the greatest song. That should be that is the theme of Sonic. As great as His World is, which also wasn't there in the vocals, that they could have done that too. I think Crush 40 did a rendition of. I don't believe they did the version that was in 06, but I know they've done a version of it. That's probably Sonic's second best song. But the orchestral stuff is just eternal. Like, it's always good when you listen to when old video game music gets a live concert with the violins. I'm a sucker for all of that stuff. And this was great. It's like 2 hours. It's major, major content. So I'll be listening to it many more times. I do think it was weird that they did colors at the end. It's I know they did colors at the end because the Ultimate is coming out, but did they really need to use the concert as a marketing thing?
Yeah.
Colors?
Yes.
Did they really?
Use every opportunity, Tyler. Yes.
I just felt like it was, if you're watching this, You're like me, and you're like, did they really need to do colors? The colors came out in 2010. Like, why are they saving this for the end? Like, the color soundtrack is good. It's not the best. You know, they do a mashup of the best songs at the end. I don't know. That was a little suspect, but overall, phenomenal. Great job by the Sonic team.
Yep. Medley, all the songs performed. I mean, heck, I was surprised that Nate Wantabattle was collaborating with the band to make these renditions again. And of course, that, as I said, that finale was just like creme de la creme, pure Crush 40. It's like, yeah, that, like, it just really lights the fire on your soul.
Yeah, you gotta close 40. With Live and Learn. That's the way to go. If you're not closing with Live and Learn, what are you doing? And they understand.
They're not playing Smash Brothers. That's what. All right. So that was good. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. I did not watch it. I haven't had the time. And honestly, I'm not that interested. Zelda was better. So, but this brought up an interesting topic because we seriously, before the podcast, decided to talk about our favorite video game soundtracks across the various franchises that we love. And we got into quite an interesting discussion about, you know, which one was better, which one wasn't. And, yeah, let's settle it in Smash. And I will go first because you guys just talked about music forever, so it almost felt like 2 hours. But yeah, so I'm going to go first because I already know who has the best music, and it's The Legend of Zelda. It's not even close. I'm sorry, not sorry, Rhesus. So why Legend of Zelda? Well, for now 35 years, they have done music that has captured the essence of action-adventure games. From the overworld theme that everybody is probably already singing in their head right now, to the various tracks of Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, Seasons and Ages, Wind Waker, which I know was one of Tyler's favorites, Twilight Princess with its little bit more of a like orchestral Lord of the Rings style themes, of course Skyward Sword. They had some really good ones for Skyloft and everything. Of course, Breath of the Wild with its much more atmospheric feeling. You know, you might not know all the song titles. I know I do not. But if you start to sing one, you know exactly what the next notes are going to be. Like everybody's favorite Kokori song. Everyone knows Zelda's Lullaby.
That's not Zelda's Lullaby.
Sorry, I'm sorry. That's the song. Sorry, it's the Song of Time. Sorry. Sorry, I'm trying to think. I was already thinking of the next song. Like a Pona song.
Let's get back to the Zelda's Lullaby, though. Okay. Let's just bring it back to that. Okay, give us a bar.
I'm sorry, are you...
We're settling this in Smash. You know, and Zelda's Lullaby, it's
are
like
you...
the...
Are
it's like the main
me?
One.
I told you, I was just thinking about the song. It's da 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 da.
Okay, yeah, you got it.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry. I got the. I was thinking of Majora's Mask, and then I got the Song of Time mixed up. All right, screw you, Tyler.
It's settle it in Smash. Listen, I gotta counsel on that.
But yes, Zelda's Lullaby, and Epona's song, and everything. Song of Storms. Da 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 da. You know all the song beats, even if you don't know all the song titles. Like I could give you like a bunch of the temple tracks, even though I can't exactly remember their titles for whatever reason. And you know, Zelda just has these sweeping musical beats that, you know, capture the feeling, whether it was in 2D or 3D. You know, you felt it, and you like the Ballad of the Windfish. You know, I always remember the Ballad of the Windfish just because of the A Link's Awakening was my first Zelda game, and of course I loved playing it on both the GBA and the Switch. Is I actually got to finish it, thank God. But yeah, da na na da na na da na 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 na. You know, it's beautiful, and you remember these tracks because they stick with the story, and the music was tied to the story in a way that was beautiful, and it made the world more enriching. And you know, when you had there are like these big moments, like I always remember when Ganon, when you fight or you meet Ganon right before the time jump, and he's just like looming over you, and like the dun, 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 you know, and all that stuff. But that's what Zelda means in many ways, is that it's the music that just brings the world to life in so many ways. And for 35 years across, you know, handheld titles, console titles, and everything, it lasts. And again, even if you don't know all the names of the songs, you know the beats, you know, because they stick out to you. They're always there, and they're so dang catchy. And sure, they may not be like, you know, 3-minute arias, but you'll know like the 20, 30 seconds that you need to know because you heard it so many bloody times in the game because you're playing it over and over and over again. And frankly, if you don't agree with that, well, excuse me, princess! See? Stunned them in the silence. You're welcome.
I was just giving you some time to pass. I mean, listen, Zelda music is great. It's great, for sure. Wind Waker, the soundtrack there, Outset Island, absolutely ridiculously wonderful. Rito Village, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Is another banger. The Great Sea. Wind Waker has a soundtrack that I think is pretty much unmatched. And Ocarina of Time has some great ones as well. But I think the like we talked about Midna's Lament. I couldn't give you a bar of that one. I don't remember what it sounds like. And I'm sure it's great, but and I know it's in Smash, but I don't remember it. To me, the Zelda music generally is more of a background thing. It rarely takes center stage. It sets the mood in its best moments. It sets the mood for the environment, like Soraya's song. But I wouldn't say it does that better than Mario, for example, which is not my pick. But if we were doing Nintendo franchise music, Zelda would be in the top 5, but probably number 5 for me.
Just for the record, Midna's Lament.
Yeah.
See? Midna, my girl. Just saying. My queen. Just
All right.
All right, Will, I'll let you go next. What is your top musical franchise?
I mean, it's really hard to really think about like the songs that are really without sounding like aiming for the low hanging fruit. But honestly, it's just kind of be with Mario for me. Like, we grew up with this thing for so long. I mean, yeah, in the same time age as Zelda and all that. But like going to Mario, it's just like, that's the tune you always remember, even from the, like, way back when, back in the Sprite era. Like, yes, Koji Kondo, with his great works of that simple melody of, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's just, like, that beginning and just that renditions for all these years of, like, as old as, like, yeah, we just celebrated on Mario anniversary. It's just, like, that song, that simple melody is just continues with the rendition of like throughout the games, be it Paper Mario or like in Galaxy games. I mean, right now, just at the top of my head, I kind of still remember a Glitzville in Paper Mario Dozen Eudora, just like that. It's just like that wrestling theme, amusement park, and then of course when you go into that ring area of Rock Hawk, like yeah, that thing, that's like yeah, that's WWE brother. It's like all that, so like. And of course, like just all these different games that come from 64 with like from the water level, like that subtle but like also haunting theme. Of course, with the like in Boo's Mansion, that thing's like strikes horror. And from like Super Mario World, like hearing going to the ghost house. That thing still strikes fear to me in some sense, like even after all these years. Like all these different turns from Mario's legacy, it's just like there is always something that like kind of easily transport you back into like that state of when you were a kid. Like, and then that's kind of like one of Nintendo's greatest powers and knows what the greatest techniques is, like with music or be with their games or music, they always have a moment to really take you back into like a certain moment in time, with be it their stages or in a moment in your life. Like take for a recent example with like Odyssey, with yes, Jump Up Superstar, when we hear it with Kate Higgins from the like the Broadway style, when they also did a demonstration here in New York. Like yeah, you know, like Jump Up Superstar was just gonna be that banger hit that's gonna like basically helped it with the Switch era in the beginning year. And of course naturally with other stages here and everything of that is just like be it like the Star theme or the Peach's theme or just like any the heck, even like that closing area of Galaxy of not Galaxy or Odyssey with that Sonic-esque theme is just like yeah, you just can't help but do remember like yeah, Mario teams. That's the reason why Mario has stayed so relevant all these years. Yes, it's nostalgic. Yes, it's just like, oh, another Mario game. But you just remember these tunes just because it's just so iconic. So just to wrap it up, it's just like, yeah, the Mario themes, all just like even the bits, the medleys, all everything in between is just like, you just can't help but just remember. And just like it's that earworm that stays in your head. Like everyone knows the Mario theme. Everyone knows like yeah, like even the, like common folk know what Mario is. So that's just kind of like shows like it is indeed one of the more like if not strongest soundtracks out there in the world right now. So for me, I gotta say it's just the Mario legacy.
All right, Tyler.
Well, hold on, just one second for Will's Mario point. I think it's a great point. I think if you're looking at the single most evocative Nintendo song, it's Rosalina and the Comet Observatory. That is the best, I think, period Nintendo song out there. That is just instant emotion every time for me. Don't know why, it's just instant.
The Mario Orchestra is definitely one of the top tier orchestras out there. I agree. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. So I'm like, honestly, guys, this is tough. I am torn between three
picks.
So I'm just going to rule out Donkey Kong. I'm going to take Donkey Kong off the board.
Really? I thought you were going to go for Donkey Kong.
DK rap, though.
So it might be my favorite. It just depends on your mood. You know how music is. It depends on your mood.
Mood.
I have assigned one game to heads and one game to tails.
Okay.
You guys determine amongst yourselves which one you want to call. I'm not going to tell you the games, but
tails.
Heads or tails.
Tails.
Will, tails, are you okay with tails, Will? Will, are you okay if we flip this coin and it's tails?
I'm going to take a silence as a yes and override him. Just flip the dang coin.
I flipped the coin and it was heads.
Ugh, fine.
It was heads, so that means I'm going to argue for the Mother series.
And oh, God! Fun. Come on!
Yeah, of course.
Tails
of
was course. Xenoblade Chronicles.
Ooh! See, that now I know why I lost, because we all know you don't like Xenoblade Chronicles.
Right? Yeah, so Xenoblade Chronicles, it feels a little unfair because it's modern, so like you get that. Anyway. Oh. But we're arguing for Earthbound here. If the argument is the best music, I think the number one thing VGM has to do is set the tone for what you're experiencing. And Earthbound's music does that better than any other series besides Xenoblade, which is just as good as, and therefore I had to flip a coin. You start out on it, and the journey is just beginning, and you have this heavy on the NES or SNES sound chip, and the little piano kicks in, and you feel like you're walking down your neighborhood block, just seeing the familiar faces, headed to your favorite pizza parlor, and that's exactly what you're doing in the game. You're strolling around home, you're going for a walk downtown, and you're comfortable. Then you head to the next town where you're going to meet Paul and Ness's Bay. And this beautiful little like innocent child love theme kicks in with some nice piano. The do 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 do. It's awesome. Just absolutely one of my favorites. Check out Michelle Heafy's Tucson theme. Phenomenal cover on YouTube. Then you head to this monster town, and the music gets dark, and you start hearing these kind of this like feedback in this threed theme that's just, it's uneasy and it's horror, and the bass is going, and it's a deeper vibrating sound, and this is all done on the Super Nintendo, which is just, and it's an old sound chip obviously, but it doesn't feel old. That music, it still works so well to this day. It holds up because it perfectly sets the theme. Four Sides Theme is the greatest song besides Rosalina and the Comet Observatory, in my opinion. Listen to Four Side Melee. You're in this big city. You've come all the way. You've traveled through this desert. You've traveled through this ghost town. You've finally visited the town next door, and you hit this gigantic, sprawling metropolis. And just the trumpets come in, the horns start to go, and you feel like you're walking through New York City after a long journey. You feel like you're at the hub. It is perfect. It is the culmination of those first four towns. The first time I crossed through the tunnel and it started to play, I was like, this is, I'd already heard the song in Melee. I didn't know what it was going to sound like in Earthbound. And just hearing it was incredible. It's so darn good. And all the little soundtracks in between when you're traveling with the Runaway Five, they have a nice little like jazzy theme. They're like a Blues Brothers knockoff, and it's just every song in that game nails it. Winter's the atmospheric cold. It's pristine, and I think that's why I would put it as my 1A or 1B, depending on my day, with Xenoblade Chronicles.
Should have known to be Earthbound. I mean, I should have known.
Listen to the soundtrack. Listen, you got to listen to it. It's amazing.
I've played Earthbound a little before.
And that's only Mother 2. Like, yeah. Mother 1 on NES has some great songs. Being Friends is awesome. The 8 Melodies, awesome. Pollyanna, awesome. And then Mother 3 is no slouch either with the love theme. That one's ridiculously great. I have not gotten far in Mother 3 for obvious reasons. It's never been released here, and I was trying to play on a Japanese version. Didn't work. So I can't tell you all of the Mother 3 songs, except for a certain Someone's Memories, which is a Pollyanna remix. However, Earthbound music is, it's pristine. It's pristine.
Uh-huh.
More Ardain in Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is something else. That song is something else.
There are some great tracks in Xenoblade. 1, 2, and X. So yeah.
You will know our names. You will. Yeah. Is there a better boss theme than You Will Know Our Names? I say
that
no.
That was a good one. So I would praise Xenoblade Chronicles X music, but it had like 6 songs. Like that, seriously, like listen to it. There's only like 6 songs, and they play on repeat. I'm like,
get some more
tracks. And that's what they did for 2, because they wanted to make sure they didn't have the music backlash again.
Right. I still remember, like, yeah, even the hub world, like Neo Los Angeles, like, yeah, like the poppy thing, and then we had that whole nighttime rap. Like, okay.
one by one.
But I will forever still love Black Tar. I will forever still love Black Tar.
I will also give a special shout out to one title that music absolutely dominates in. That's, of course, Wii Music. And no, I kid. I'm talking, of course, about The World Ends With You, because that game had so much personality in their musical tracks, you know, with the J-pop and everything. And a nice ringtone there, or musical alert
there,
Tyler.
It's not even, my phone's not even on. It's just doing that to annoy me.
So, but like, no, World Ends With You, it had some great tracks, and then like when they played the final trailer for the sequel, they played one of their classic songs. I'm like, yeah, I know that song, I know that one. So it's like, and again, music, we make fun of it, you know, like, oh, this one's better. Music absolutely makes games, you know. Think about every great franchise, whether it be like, you know, Halo, Ratchet and Clank, Sly Cooper, you know, Donkey Kong, all of them across all platforms. Music helps make the game, even if you don't realize it, because it sets the tone, it sets the mood. Like, think about what Tyler was talking about with You Will Know Our Names. why does he think about that? Because you feel that he felt the energy from the song when he's doing the boss fight. Because you already got something going when you're in a boss fight. It's a boss fight. But the song triggered something in him. Like, yeah, I'm ready for this. I am ready for this boss fight. You know, that's what the music does for you. Or when it's like, you know, a more, subtle thing, like with his love songs in Earthbound, which is a little weird, but okay. You felt something. It was an emotion. It's helped sense a mood or a tone, you know, and music is a beautiful thing.
Yep. I mean, I'm so, like, very surprised. Like, even with that review trailer, like, I'm surprised no one very few people actually from Nintendo side actually recognizes the One-Winged Angel of Sephiroth, which, yeah, like, that thing is iconic.
Yeah. Final Fantasy is another great example of how it went from, like, the 8-bit music to 16-bit to...
Full orchestral,
starting with, what was it, 8, I believe? You know, they went full orchestra, and they never looked back.
Yeah, but that's the power of Nobuo Uematsu, man. That power of Nobuo.
Yeah, so... And, you know, and of course, we only really touched on Nintendo franchises, but across all the platforms, you know, they have, like, music that just shines and helps make these universes seem even more rich and developed, and that's why we're praising them, is because the music really does help. So, no matter what franchise or track you like the best, respect the music, and when you hear a good song, recognize it.
And yeah, just briefly as well, like, I want to say brief highlight to Grant Kirkhope. I mean, look at him. His record is, like, even to recent, like, Mario Rabbids, that thing was just amazing. Even I can remember Grant Kirkhope.
Yeah, that's so easy to argue for Donkey Kong, just to say Grant Kirkhope, and then you walk away and people go, yep,
DK Rap.
He's pretty great. He's pretty great.
DK Rap forever. Here we go. All right, and with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week we asked you... what did we ask you last week?
Oh, that's gosh. Seriously? You know what's coming!
You changed gears quickly that time.
Oh, please. I gave you plenty of setup.
We asked you what your favorite surprise announcement from Nintendo Z3 was, and 20% of you said Kazuya for Smash, 0% said WarioWare, 80% said Metroid Dread, and Advanced Wars 1 and 2 received 0% also. We did not receive many votes on this. I think it was lost in the E3
probably
buzz.
Sorry. Also, but I'm going to laugh that WarioWare got no votes. I will. Sorry. All right. This time, we are going to spiral right from our main event. Which franchise has the best music? Mario, Zelda, or Earthbound?
Well, there could be only one.
Actually, technically speaking, there could be a tie, because there's only three of us. But I suspect that one, Zelda, will win out in the end. We shall see. And of course, let us know what you thought of all the news of the week, from the Pokemon Company slamming down their ban hammer on the leakers and making them pay, literally. Are you surprised at the Metroid sales after the announcement of Dread? Were you able to get a pre-order for Shin Megami Tensei 5? Are you going to get the demo for The World Ends With You? The Neo The World Ends With You? And are you going to get Mario Golf Super Rush when it comes out? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Talia Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time, but we are not out of lives. We've made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag!